Hey, this is Greg Cannon, and today we are going to be doing a little non-scripted role-playing between myself and an adjuster. Caleb's actually one of our newest PAs here and worked for one of the larger, most well-known insurance companies as a field adjuster for a few years. So he's got a few things he wanted to go over today. Plus, we have an email fresh off the press from that same carrier asking a bunch of questions and trying to stall the claim process. So I hope you guys enjoy or get a little bit of information out of what we've got to say today.
Hey, Greg, I wanted to talk to you about Oriana's claim.
Oriana's claim, all right. How can I help you?
Yeah, there's a few. I got your proof of loss, and I was reviewing the estimate and all the documentation that you sent to me. I had a few issues with it.
Sure.
On line number 3, it's a code item. Greg, this is paid when incurred. This isn't something I can just put in the estimate until the work's been completed.
Well, you could put it in as payment when incurred, correct?
I could.
Okay.
I would have paid that, though.
But also, items that are reasonably likely to be incurred should be included up front. Would you disagree?
I would disagree because the policy says that it's paid once incurred.
Great. I'm glad you brought up the policy. But yeah, there's nothing stopping anybody from putting in his payment when incurred, correct?
That's correct. I'll go ahead and update the estimate. Valley flashing looks to be on the roof. On the valley flashing, were you able to verify that there was actually flashing on the roof?
Yes.
Okay.
It was verified in the photos that we sent to you in the proof of loss.
Okay. I wasn't able to see it, unfortunately.
No problem. You're more than welcome to go out there as many times as you would like to take photos.
On your code information, I'm not really seeing it. I don't think this is really an enforced code at all. Can I get a letter from you saying that this code is actually enforced? This is not something we'd really normally pay for.
We've already sent you all that documentation in the proof of loss packet. You've got laws from the state of Oklahoma.
But they don't enforce it.
Who doesn't enforce it?
The city.
So did you not read the letter from the insurance commissioner saying that all building codes should be seen as strictly enforced?
But we do know that they don't enforce those.
Who knows that?
The general industry. We know that, you know, we're not enforcing like porta potties to be on site and things of that nature. Nobody does that, Greg.
Okay. Well, you're in the insurance industry, not the construction industry. So your opinion on the matter really doesn't make a difference to me. But Xactimate has the line item in the program. Therefore, the construction industry deems it necessary. Not only that, but we sent you the documentation from OSHA. It's a federal regulation. So are you trying to tell me that the feds don't enforce their statutory laws?
So what I'm trying to say is what we owe for is the least amount.
I know you think that.
The least amount per the policy to reasonably get the work done. If I drive down the street and I look at all these houses having their roofs put on and such, there's no porta potties at them. Okay. It's reasonable that they're not going to need a porta potty.
Is it reasonable to make somebody hold it while they're working an 8-hour day? I can't speak to what other contractors do, but here's what I do know. We are in the United States of America. People are innocent until proven guilty. What you're suggesting to me is all contractors always break all the laws, which I think is absurd. So until we witness them violating the state or federal mandates, we're going to assume they're going to abide by the state and federal mandates.
So you're telling me not having a porta potty is breaking the law?
Absolutely. Which is in the documentation that we sent you in the proof of loss packet. If you want to sit there and watch the roofers do it and turn them in to OSHA or turn them into the state, be my guest. But I'm not sitting here trying to police the construction industry. I'm sitting here trying to get the money they need to get the work done correctly so that the policyholder can be indemnified.
So on your overhead profit, I noticed that you have 2025. The industry standard's 10 and 10. Well, that's what all insurance companies, you always hear people say 10 and 10. They're talking about overhead and profit. I've never seen 2025.
Again, you're talking about the insurance industry, and I'm talking about the construction industry. So there have been several books written on the subject. Michael Stone's Markup and Profit book, for that matter. There's been two different versions written. There's also been numerous articles. One, in fact, very well written in Roofing Contractor magazine, that explains the average overhead for roofing contractors between 23 and 37%.
And I would agree with that. That's why Xactimate has built-in profit. It sounds like you're double-dipping.
It would sound like that if you didn't understand how the program actually was broken down. So if it was a steadfast rule, don't you think that it would be unchangeable in the program? We can enter in whatever amount we want to in those overhead and profit numbers, can't we?
That's correct, yes.
So if it were the industry standard and Xactimate was making the rule, then it would be a steadfast number and not a number that can be changed, correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
So Section 9 of Xactimate's end user agreement, have you read it?
I have not.
We provided it in our proof of loss packet.
I should have read it then.
Perhaps. But to summarize, it basically says that nobody can force another person using that program to alter or to use a certain price list. So you can't force me to use 10 and 10, for instance. That's against their end user agreement. What that means is you're violating the terms of the licensure that you have with them, and they could probably yank the program from you.
So, but what the insurance industry owes for is we owe for a reasonable amount to get the work completed. We wrote a reasonable estimate. Your estimate's absolutely unreasonable.
Right. According to whom?
According to us.
Right. So you're the ones writing the check, and you're telling me you're the ones that get to decide what's reasonable and what's not? That's a conflict of interest, I would say. If you've got an internal code counsel or an internal coverage counsel available, you might want to consult them. They might have a Black's Law Dictionary somewhere. You'd benefit from reading it.
So, Greg, I had an engineer come out. This engineer said that basically the trusses that are damaged in the roof is not storm-related. It has to do with soil movements and earthquakes, and it happens over time.
So you're saying it's earthquake damage?
It's potential, yeah. So because of that, it's not related to the storm, though. So that would be something I wouldn't be able to consider.
According to whom?
Well, it's a separate occurrence.
Now, you're saying, so you sent out an engineer?
Correct, yes.
Did you consult with the policyholder about this engineer?
No.
How did you select this engineer?
From a list that's provided by our insurance company.
What kind of list?
There's an internal list that we basically just pick one out of.
Can you send me a copy?
No.
Okay. So here's the problem we have with this. You sent out basically another adjuster. You sent out an agent working for you, selected by you, and paid for by you, and you're trying to pretend like they're unbiased? I don't buy it.
Well, I don't know this person. I don't have a relationship with them. I'm looking for an expert opinion. That's what I paid them for, is an opinion. They're not an adjuster. They're not licensed as an adjuster. They are a licensed engineer in the state, though.
Sure, but they're performing the same job.
I would disagree. They're basically giving their expert opinion as an engineer. They've never handled a claim file, so therefore they would be an engineer.
So they don't know anything about coverage?
No. I'm the one that makes the coverage decision, not them.
So what definition of damage do they use?
The definition of damage, they're looking for damages that are just naturally occurring, or basically what I want to know from them is what caused the breaks in the trusses. And that's all I need to know from them.
That's all you need to know?
Yes.
So they're not to take anything else into consideration. So basically, so to recap, you selected the engineer.
Correct.
You're paying for the engineer.
Correct.
You're giving the engineer instructions on what to look for.
Well, I'm instructing them. I need to know what caused the damage to the trusses.
Right. This is an agent of yours whose opinion is biased and means absolutely nothing in this process.
I didn't instruct him on what the damages were caused by. I just need to know what caused it.
So what was the scope of work?
What was the scope of work?
Mm-hmm. What were his instructions?
I instructed him I needed to know what caused the damage to the trusses.
Based on his opinion?
Well, it's an educated opinion. He's an engineer and he's licensed in the state as well.
He is?
Yes.
You sure about that?
Yes.
Okay. What is his area of expertise?
I don't know.
Yeah, we looked it up. It's civil. He's a civil engineer. So what qualifies him to take a look at trusses and soil movement to try to discredit a valid claim as he was selected by you, paid for by you, given instructions by you?
But all we're looking for is basically to figure out what caused the damage to the trusses. That's what really, because the policy says that we have to have a valid cause, we have to have a cause of loss. And so that's the whole reason for his employment. Go out there and tell me what the cause of loss is. And he did find that. He said, you know, that basically the soil movement resulted in the trusses coming apart. And that's what caused it. So it's a damage over time. Because it's a damage over time, it's not something I could consider.
Then how does he explain the fact that it wasn't there prior to the loss?
Well, it was there prior to the loss is what the engineer is still saying.
How would he know that? How would he know that with 100% certainty unless, since he was chosen by you, paid for by you, and is expecting to get more business from you, is trying to make you happy?
It wasn't a question of him making me happy. I just need to know what caused the damage.
So he would need to be sitting there for the last 25 years in a lawn chair or otherwise, witnessing the fact that this happened over time for him to give a 100% certain opinion that it happened over time, correct?
I would disagree. I mean, you can look at things and you can have a causation. You can understand this happens over time. This isn't something that just happens. It's like blistering on a roof. That doesn't happen in one day. I mean, it's caused over time.
Okay. And that's called wear and tear, right?
Correct.
Right. Which is a condition that's depreciated, correct?
It's excluded under our policies.
We didn't file a claim for wear and tear.
Correct.
We filed a storm damage claim. So here's two things that we have going on here. One, we have to have a safe work environment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Broken trusses, no bueno. You cannot have a load-bearing weight on this roof while the work is going on with broken trusses. It can't happen. Right? But number two, the building code, of course, will not allow you to put a new roof over broken trusses.
So I think that the policyholder is going to owe for the trusses because it's wear and tear and it's a pre-existing condition. Now, we will pay for the hail damage to the roof and we'll even pay for a redeck, but we're not going to pay for the trusses.
Sure, I understand. You think you're not going to pay for the trusses. The problem we have is you're not able to deny an adequate cause of loss based on a separate condition. So we didn't file a wear and tear claim. We filed a storm damage claim, okay? Mm-hmm. So you can't bring in a separate exclusion of wear and tear to deny a legitimate storm damage claim. That's not how coverage works,
mm-hmm.
All right? You can consult the FCNS if you would like. Again, I would urge you to consult your coverage counsel because that's not how coverage works. If you want to claim that there's wear and tear existing during this valid storm claim, I understand. That's what depreciation is for. But by your logic, wear and tear happening the day after an installation, that means that you wouldn't have to pay for anything ever. Because the day after a roof installation, it's old. It's starting to wear and tear.
Let's get back to what insurance actually covers. We cover sudden, accidental, and direct. So because of that, I can cover for the hail damage. I can cover wind damage. It suddenly occurs. It directly affects the property. And obviously the insured didn't do it himself.
Mm-hmm.
So SDA, sudden, direct, accidental. On the trusses, that didn't happen suddenly. This happened over a long period of time. It doesn't meet the definition of a sudden occurrence.
You're stating that like it's a fact, and that's not a fact. That's an opinion of a guy who wasn't standing there when it happened.
So based upon the damages, it looks like it was soil movement resulted in the trusses separating.
Again, I saw no evidence of that in his report. That's his opinion. There's no empirical data. There was no ASTM test that was performed to determine that. That's his opinion. It's the opinion of a civil engineer and one that you hired that wants to do more business with you, in which there was no input given or any levity or gravity given to the policyholder as to whom you were going to choose to send out there. That's a little fishy to me and suspect. But more importantly, there has to be a safe work area. So you're saying, and here's where you're wrong about coverage. You don't only cover sudden and accidental direct physical damage. You cover to indemnify the policyholder. You owe to put them back they were to pre-loss condition, okay? Coverage is triggered by a sudden and accidental event. That's not all you owe for. If that were the case, then you would only owe for, why would you pay for felt paper underneath the roof shingles? Was it suddenly and accidentally damaged by hail? Of course not. But it's part of the claim, because in order to replace that roof system correctly, it has to be replaced. Same thing with these trusses. Nobody has offered any empirical, 100% conclusive evidence that those trusses happened over time. What I do know is the roof system cannot be put back on while they're broken. So we've got whatever doctrine you want to use, proximate cause, mm-hmm. congruent causation, anything else you want to apply to it is fine, but the roof cannot be put on with broken trusses. So that's why you're going to pay for it. Otherwise, I'm going to need to see a denial in writing, and I'm going to need to see the portion of the policy you're using to deny that particular line in the scope.
Wood shake roof, only one missing shake on the entire roof. It's got worn out. So, okay. Or let's not say one missing shake. I mean, there's hail damage in the area. You got a data loss. Doesn't look like there's much damage. But let's say you got 20 missing, maybe 30 missing shakes throughout the roof. It's just old. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. We deal with probably 30 of these a year.
Yep. And I figured we would, so I'd like this scenario. So, Mr. Cannon, I got done with the Mr. Smith's estimate. You know, Mr. Cannon, I only found 30 shingles damaged. Your estimate's $80,000. We're not going to be able to pay that. I reviewed all the documentation and the proof of loss. Again, it's only 30 shingles. We don't owe for an entire roof just for 30 shingles.
Interesting. How do you propose we replace those 30 shake?
So I'm not a contractor, so I don't know. But I do know that what we owe for is sudden direct accidental damage. And because we owe for sudden direct accidental damage, we would only owe for 30 shingles.
Again, no. You owe to indemnify the policyholder. The policyholder had a complete roof system that was shedding water prior to this loss, and now they do not. Now, I would agree, maybe there's only 30 out there. I counted more than that. We have to count the ones that are missing as well, as this is a storm damage claim, mm-hmm. and we're not limited to either wind or hail. But even, let's say that there was 100 of them that needed to be replaced. How do you facilitate that repair? Because I've sent you the documentation in our proof of loss packet that explain how the Cedar Shake and Shingle Bureau, which is basically the manufacturer's instructions of this roof system, expect the repair to be done.
So the only problem that I have with that is what I owe for is damage. So if there's 30 shingles damage, I owe for 30 shingles.
Okay. So we're going in circles.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not able to concede the fact that you owe to indemnify the policyholder to pre-loss condition, we're going to have to get your supervisor on the phone.
So indemnify for 30 shingles, because that's all that's damaged. If hail damage 30 shingles, then I owe for 30 shingles.
Yes, but you also owe replacement cost, correct?
Yeah.
New for old.
We'll pay for replacement cost of the 30 shingles.
So explain to me how those 30 shingles are supposed to be replaced.
The issue is I'm also not a contractor. I'm not going to be the one doing the work.
Okay.
So because of that, I mean, I know what Xactimate says. It's replace, you know, I'm going to remove 30 shingles. I'm going to replace 30 shingles. And that's what we'd owe for because that's what's damaged. The other shingles aren't damaged by hail or wind. It's not something that's covered under the policy just for worn out. We would deny that because we don't owe for wear and tear.
Well, you would deny that because you deny anything you don't feel like paying for. You've already mentioned that you're not a contractor, so why don't you consult one? I would ask that you consult a contractor who is registered with the Cedar Shake and Shingle Bureau, who has a history of repairing wood shake roofs and not some Yahoo you just find off Craigslist. But how about we get a contractor who is certified through the Cedar Shake and Shingle Bureau to go out here and give us an opinion and attempt a repair?
So I would be willing to concede that. We have a direct repair program. I can talk to one of the direct repair representatives and see if he can come out there and write an estimate.
Sure, but you're not going to do to me what you usually do and pick your own guy, right, and try to say that they're unbiased. What we're going to do is we're going to decide together somebody that is registered with the Cedar Shake and Shingle Bureau. Do you have a problem with that?
I'm not aware of what that is.
It's not surprising. But a quick Google search will help you out.
Okay. I will look into that, and if I can find anyone that we work with, I will definitely select that contractor.
No, again, I don't want anybody that you work with because we're traveling down this road of bias now. Somebody that you work with who is part of your managed repair program who basically makes their living from you mm-hmm. is going to be loyal to you. What we need is somebody who is objective mm-hmm. to go out there and give an honest opinion, not a paid for opinion, not a bought and paid for opinion.
So you're painting a picture, Mr. Cannon, that says that we're biased. What I'm paying my experts for is an unbiased opinion. I don't want a biased opinion. This is something that they may be called to court about. And under no circumstances do I want them to just give me what I want to hear. I want a completely unbiased opinion about the wood shake roof And I'm more than willing to get a contractor out there to do that.
Great. Then we agree. We'll pick off the Cedar Shake and Shingle Bureau's list.
As long as one of my direct repair program representatives is on it. If there's not, then I can provide the list and you can pick whichever one you want.
Okay. But I still have a problem. Why does it have to be somebody on your direct repair program?
The reason is because if they say they can do it, and then they can do it, and they will do it, and then we'll guarantee the work.
So no other contractor will do it if they say they can do it?
Well, they will, but we will guarantee the work.
We who?
Farmers.
Okay.
So we'll guarantee that they can do the work. Right. If they say they can do it, we'll guarantee it.
Guarantee it how?
Guarantee that the work gets completed through their guarantee, though.
Right. Okay. But you won't guarantee the work done by another contractor?
Correct. We only guarantee people that we've vetted and made sure that they're good.
What are the qualifications to be on your list?
I'm not aware of that. I just know that we have a list and we guarantee the work.
If you don't mind, would you find that out for me? Send me a copy of whatever it takes to be on your list?
I don't know if I'm privy to that information, and I'm not a part of that group that does the vetting. I do know that they do have to show financial stability, that they're a reputable contractor, and that's really about the extent of my knowledge of it.
Okay. I'm sure you can find out, though.
Yeah, I can probably find out.
Okay.
So if I'm able to release that data to you, Mr. Cannon, I definitely will.
Well, I mean, if it's going to be coming up as pertinent information in this claim, you're going to need to release it to me. Otherwise, you're going to have to write me a letter explaining why you're going to refuse to release it to me.
So would the direct repair stuff really actually matter? So when you said the pertinent information, so basically because I brought up the direct repair program, I just exposed everything about that in the legal case.
I don't know about legal, but I mean, sort of, yes. You're the one bringing it in. Mm-hmm. I need to know what's going on. How are you selecting these contractors? If you're going to sit there and say that they're unbiased, even though they get their leads from you, they basically make their paycheck off of you, mm-hmm. they're no better than the adjuster you're sending out. Same thing Correct. With the engineer.
Yeah.
Any of these so-called experts,
mm-hmm.
they're not third-party experts if all they do is work for a certain insurance company.
Okay.
Or a certain few insurance companies. Why would they be considered unbiased just because they're charging hourly?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you charge hourly, but 90% of your income comes from the carrier side,
mm-hmm.
that's supposed to be the saving grace. The loophole is since you charge hourly, you're supposed to be unbiased.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. That wouldn't make sense to a normal person.
It doesn't make sense to a lot of people.
It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
So this one says, this is a code item and an incurred cost. Okay, great. Add it for PWI if you feel so inclined. But if it's reasonably likely to be incurred, then it needs to be paid for. Valley flashing. He's welcome to go take as many pictures as he wants. If he's going to demand that we go out there and take additional photographs, then he can pay for our time.
Okay.
And we'll charge him a trip charge.
Okay.
Please provide the code and letter from the city showing that this is a code item and is required. We've provided him the information from the state.
Sure.
From Title 748 and Title 59, as well as the letter from the insurance commissioner stating that he is to consider the building codes as enforced.
And that's Exhibit 3 or 2? I think it was Exhibit 2. I'm not sure.
I think it's 2. Yeah. So if he's trying to tell us that the city is stronger than the state, he is sorely mistaken, and he needs to go back to government class in high okay. school. Now, unless if the policy says that a letter has to be sent from the city mm-hmm. showing enforcement, that's different.
Okay.
The policy's king, right? The policy yeah. is what prevails. So unless there's some other case law or some other stuff somewhere that negates that, but these are not storm-related occurrences as shown by the engineer's report. This was
long-term.
That's
what I was talking about, the trusses. The thing on the trusses, though, here's the deal. I think the engineering report's bullshit, like just straight up. Like I really do. I don't know how soil movement would do that. I really can't. What I think it is, I think the wind actually went underneath it and slightly picked it up. It's a possibility. I can't say it didn't. Maybe it's soil movement, but I think it's an improper installation too. There's a lot of factors, but here's the deal. Either way, I think the engineer's reports is discounted because exactly what you said. You can't do the roof unless you fix it. You just can't.
You can't.
So that's actually what I was going to tell him. I was like, hey, thanks for paying $4,000 for the engineer and error report that absolutely means absolutely nothing.
Yes.
It doesn't mean dick. I mean, it doesn't.
No.
Here's the deal. You got
to
do it.
You don't get to apply a separate exclusion to a valid claim.
Right.
That's not how that works.
Yep.
You can't cross coverage like that.
Yep. I mean,
if we filed a wear and tear claim against or on the trusses, then yeah. Engineer says that it's old damage. That could be his opinion. But okay, so we don't cover wear and tear. Great. Your wear and tear claim is denied. I get it. That's not what we filed.
Correct. It's like somebody saying the shingles are damaged but the ridge cap's not. So we're not going to pay for the ridge cap.
Right.
We got to do the roof. And to do that, you got to fix three trusses. I gave them a way out. I was nice about it. I agreed to sister the trusses, basically. Not remove all the decking and redo all the trusses on that house. That was nice. I took the engineer's report into consideration on that. But it doesn't excuse the fact that they have to fix the trusses.
Yeah.
It's just common sense.
As stated above, the insured residence was cluttered with numerous items of debris. If these items are removed, we can inspect and discuss. All right, so per his request, then we're going to add debris removal to our scope.
Well, I said, what items would you like us to remove? And please advise how many hours of contents manipulation you'll provide.
Yeah.
And we can get those removed. I have no problem with that. But you're going to have to pay this outside of the claim, obviously.
Right. I mean, obviously that's an access issue, right?
Yeah.
Which is covered as part of this. When he's saying this is an incurred cost, that means that he needs to pay for it?
Yeah.
Because it's been incurred? Or is he trying to say that he's not going to pay it until it's incurred?
He's trying to... So you can put it on the estimate. It's just crossed out. And then it'll say at the bottom, these items have been shown to be paid once incurred. But he hasn't even put it on the estimate. So if they're paid when incurred, he needs to reflect that.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to come out with and just say, hey, you're saying they're not covered right now. Your estimate does not have these items.
So here's items 55 through 65. He's saying these items are either unnecessary, unreasonable, or the cost of doing business for the contractor.
Yeah. You know, the permit's in there, by the way, too. Mm-hmm. I think it's line item 55 or 56. And that's what I was going to call him out on. I was like, so you're saying permits, you don't pay for them at all?
Again, he's in the insurance industry. He's not in the construction industry.
Okay.
So his opinion on whether or not these items are unnecessary or unreasonable means nothing.
Okay.
So what we need is the opinion of a licensed contractor.
Okay.
Which we have 9 letters of. But here's the deal. He needs to provide us with the documentation that backs up his assertion that these items are unnecessary or unreasonable. Because we've provided underneath every single one of these items, the federal regulation, the state law, or building code that requires these items. Not to mention the backup documentation in the packet itself.
So a good response to this, probably need to word it a little bit differently, is, Mr. Smith, you're under the impression that we're negotiating on this estimate. We're not. We've provided all the documentation that you need to support all our findings.
No, not necessarily. What you need is to point out again that we've provided all the support, third-party support documentation that backs up these items 55 through 65.
Mm-hmm.
He has provided nothing to back up his conjecture that these are either unnecessary, unreasonable, or the cost of doing business to a contractor. What exactly does that mean? Because I didn't see that defined in Xactimate.
So basically, Mr. Smith, you've provided disputes with all this information. You're under the impression that it's okay to just dispute things based upon your word. Unfortunately, I need documentation to support any differences in opinion.
Yeah.
As we've provided multiple letters stating that these are actually reasonable, and you provided nothing to counter that.
Right. No.
Obviously, it'd be cleaned up.
He knows that he's provided nothing. What you need to do is demand it from him.
Okay.
So we need your support documentation to back up your assertion that these items are unnecessary, unreasonable, or the cost of doing business. Because we have provided third-party facts, evidence, and documentation to assert that they are reasonable, necessary, and not the cost of doing business for a contractor.
So the reply should say something to the extent of, in terms of the paid and incurred line items, they're not on the estimate, so I don't see that they're paid and incurred. Can you please add or deny? Second thing, in terms of the items that you're saying are unreasonable, they're not unreasonable, and you provided no evidence that they are not, that they're not reasonable. Please provide that evidence.
Yes.
And that's basically the entire thing.
Yes.
And on the engineer, we disagree.
Anything else that he's denying, he needs to do so in writing and provide the portion of the policy that supports his denial.
Okay.
Because when he misappropriates the policy, which they do often, mm-hmm. like they'll send in, Farmers does this all the time. They'll send in the wear and tear section.
Yeah, you're right.
To try to deny a freaking hail claim. And the coverages don't cross like that.
Yeah.
So what they're trying to say is it's illusory coverage. That's what they're saying. Because the day after that roof was put on, the wear and tear process began.
Sure.
It is now, depreciation starts that day. So what they're basically saying is when wear and tear exists, they don't have to pay for hail. That's absurd.
One more scenario. You mind?
Sure.
Okay. So Farmers Claim, because I'm familiar with Farmers policies, obviously. I know them. Next Gen, Second Edition, Oklahoma, you have water damage in the living room. Ceiling has collapsed. There's damage to the carpet and everything of that nature. Living room's thrashed. But what caused the water entry was a loose pipe jack is what I'm claiming. And I'm paying for the roof. I'll pay for it with hail damage. No problem. But the pipe jack, because it was caused by wear and tear, I'm not paying for the interior damage. And I put that in writing as well.
Was there leaking prior to the loss?
I don't know.
If you don't know, then you have to pay for it. Because, I mean, if you sit the insured down, sit the policyholders down and put them through an EUO, or just flat out ask them, was this leaking prior to this date? It's either a yes or no.
It appears that it is prior, but I don't know that for sure.
You don't get to say that because you otherwise would be calling them a liar if they say no.
Well, maybe it was leaking before and they just didn't notice.
Really?
I mean, it's a possibility. I mean, how do I know it just because of all the water that day that it didn't, it could have been in an exposed area for quite some time and they could have had a small water spot and they just didn't notice it. I mean, maybe the room's dark. I don't know, but I do know that I don't see any hail damage that caused the water entry. It was the loose pipe jack. That's what caused it. And because of that, you know, our policy specifically exclude wear and tear. And the resulting water damage from wear and tear would also be excluded under the policy.
Right, but it wasn't a wear and tear claim. So how do you know the wind didn't make the pipe jack loose?
I don't think it was loosened by that. Now, so the exposed nails were actually rusted. So if they were rusted, that would mean that it's been exposed for some time. Now, if they were shiny, I could probably concede that the wind may have loosened them. But because they're rusted, I think they were exposed for some time.
So what? You get to depreciate them. But if the wind is knocking that pipe jack around, pulling these nails up, you don't know. You don't know whether that happened or not. You don't know if the hail is hitting the rubber gasket around there and it's been UV, it's been, the moisture's been sucked out from UV, causing it to be brittle. Now you got hail knocking into it, causing a hole. You don't know that. What you do know, it's a fact. What's going to be a fact is the water damage started before the loss or after the loss. Somebody's got to know. And you can't sit there and call them a liar if they say it happened after the loss. You're going to have to prove that shit. Because that would mean that they're trying to commit insurance fraud, and you're going to have to prove that as well. But if the husband and the wife are sitting there arguing and one says, oh, that shit's been up there for 3 years, that's the end of the story. Guess what? Sure. It's not covered. And we wouldn't put it in our scope.
So question on that. So does it really, so if the ceiling hasn't collapsed, it just collapsed from this storm, wouldn't I argue for it? Because I would think I would. Because I would think I would say, so you're telling me that one hailstone didn't hit that rubber boot, because your rubber boot was exactly what I was looking for. You're telling me a hailstone didn't hit that rubber boot and make it a little bit worse? Because if one drop is new because of that hail damage, that's a new occurrence.
Absolutely.
And then it should be covered under the
policy. And then they can depreciate the crap out of it.
Correct. Yeah. And it's a recoverable depreciation to you over the whole thing?
Yes.
Over time?
Yes.
That was the way I was thinking about going about it. I just didn't know. I wanted to see your response. Does that make sense?
What I would want to know is can you tell me whether or not this leaking was happening prior?
Okay.
Is it a steady leak that's been happening over time? I would need to know that. Now, was it a leak that was happening that was unknown to the insurance? Because that's covered, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's up there and it's leaking and it's spreading out through the insulation before it actually hits the drywall, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden a storm comes and knocks a couple of chunks out of that rubber gasket because it's brittle, and rain just starts dumping in and saturates to the point where it falls in, mm-hmm. there is a manifestation principle that comes into play. Mm-hmm. That means that it's covered because it was that particular damage manifested during the time of the policy period.
So I'd make an argument on this one that I'll concede, you know, okay, it's wear and tear. It's been there for a while, but you can't tell me that a hailstone didn't hit that gasket and cause more water to come in there. And if more water came in there, this is new damage with old damage. But the new damage you owe for, and it's overlapping all the old damage. So therefore you owe for all of it.
Exactly.
So, I mean, if you want to say, hey, if you want to exclude it, that's fine. You can exclude that area, but then I want you to come back and pay for it because there's new damage right on top. The drywall, 72 square feet of drywall is damaged by old damage and new damage, but you owe for the new damage, so pay for it under that.
Right.
You can't exclude it just because there's old there. You have to pay for the new.
You can depreciate it because there's old.
Depreciate it all you want. You can depreciate it down to the minimum, which I think is 25%. If I'm not, I may be wrong about that. Whatever. I don't care.
They just make it up as they go.
Yeah.
They do whatever they want. I mean, they can depreciate it 60% if they want. It doesn't matter if it's an RCB policy. The building code itself is not as important as the backup documentation.
Okay.
Because you start getting to a building code argument, then you start getting into an O&L argument. And ordinance and law coverage is meant to be an extension of the dwelling coverage. It's not a separate coverage.
Okay.
These adjusters that have been doing this for 30 years, I've been doing this 30 years, they still don't even know this. Because what they're doing is they're going off of a 30-year-old broad form policy. Mm-hmm. When a special form all perils policy, it's written differently. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to apply those old school broad form rules to new special form policies. It doesn't work that way.
See, I think that's what he was trying to do. I don't know if they had O&L coverage, ordinance and law coverage on the policy. And I thought he was just trying to exclude those items, saying building and ordinance and law is not covered.
He might be. And if they have an exclusion for O&L, that's fine. That doesn't mean they get to throw everything into an O&L category if it's required by a building code.
Yeah.
That's not what that means.
Yeah.
The O&L coverage doesn't get invoked until after the policy limits have been reached. It's an extension of dwelling coverage. It's not meant to run congruently. FCNS has article after article after decision about this.
Okay.
It's I don't even know why it even comes up anymore.
Okay.
Any general adjuster knows this, but these field guys, I don't know, they're being brainwashed by the carrier into thinking that if it's got a building code attached to it, it goes to O&L. Oh, they don't have O&L? Oh, we don't pay for that.
Right.
So you're telling me you don't pay to paint the pipe jacks if they were painted prior? Because the manufacturer's instruction says that the pipe jacks need to be painted with a UV protection.
So what I was taught is if it's not there, then we don't owe for it. But if it's building code, then and it's not there, then we can pay for it under building code to bring it up to code.
Exactly. That's wrong. You don't pay for it under building code. The building code being statutory as a part of the Oklahoma state, basically Title 748 and Title 59, makes it the minimum standard method of repair. That's the baseline that things start with.
But they owe for what is there. They owe for what is damaged.
No. They owe for what the state law says they owe for.
So they get free upgrades?
Basically, yes. They don't have to offer insurance in the state of Oklahoma or the state of
isn't that what
Kansas
ordinance and law coverage is for, though?
No. Ordinance and law coverage, and this is what I'm talking about. FCNS has made determinations about this. Ordinance and law coverage is for extension, an extended coverage, an overage amount if the government or officials come in and demand that you do something to your property.
So if my limit of insurance is $200,000 and I have 10%, that means that basically I would have still the $200,000, but until I've cleared the $200,000, ordinance and law would not come into effect.
Right. Yeah, it's not a catch-all for whatever they feel like as a building code.
So it's not like debris removal. Like debris removal, it'll say there's an additional 5% for debris removal and so on.
Well, I mean, again, that's an extension of dwelling coverage too. It's not a separate coverage because you've got coverage A, B, C, D, right?
Okay, so treat it, okay.
What letter is O&L?
So you're saying O&L needs to be treated like debris removal, basically. Because debris removal, there's an additional coverage. So like, whenever I'd work foremost claims, there's an additional 5% is what it was. I think 5% for debris removal. And if I had to get rid of the mobile home, I could just pay it up front. So let's say they had $10,000. I could add another $500 onto the estimate.
Yeah.
So, but it wasn't, debris removal didn't come into play until you exceeded limits.
Well, sure. It wouldn't be an issue. Because if you're not exceeding limits, then it just goes into standard dwelling coverage anyway.
So you're saying the building ordinance and law.
It works just like that. Yeah. In that respect, yes.
So it's identical. Like building ordinance and law, it's the same thing. This is just an additional limit. Okay. I can do that. And that actually makes a lot of sense.
Like with Allstate, you've got your Allstate policies that it's excluded unless they purchase extra coverage. Right?
Right.
Yep. That same insurance commissioner's memo has stated that forcing them to purchase that coverage with a state mandated building code is incorrect. Okay. People don't read that far into it. They don't read it all the way down. By people, I mean the insurance adjusters.
Yeah, you're right.
They just pick and choose the words they want to use out of that memo.
Or what they're instructed.
Or what they're instructed to read, right. So basically, the 2015 IRC in many, many states, including Oklahoma, Kansas, New Jersey, I mean, it doesn't matter, but the states that have mandated state minimum building codes, those states, basically, like you said, they all have O&O. Everybody's got it because that's the baseline that the standard method of repair starts at.
Okay.
By state law. No contract can supersede state law. Insurance policies are contracts. You and I can't have a contract that we're going to go steal her car and split it.
Right.
Right? That's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't sit there and say, no, we're going to force the policyholder, instead of fully indemnifying them, we're going to pay them just shy so they have to go out and hire a contractor to not do the building code correctly. That's the way the insurance company treats this. They don't give a crap. They'll even put in writing that that's the insurance company or the insured's responsibility to pay for that, which is wrong. They are basically producing scopes, sans building code, which is essentially an illegal scope.
Yeah.
They're proposing the work be done against the law.
Yeah, you're right.
So which industry are they in? And then at that point, when you point that out, well, we're not in the construction industry. We're in the insurance industry. Ah, yeah. Right. Okay. Now you are, right?